Okay, sounds good.
I want to thank everyone for coming. The shiur tonight is sponsored by the Tefillah for Shlomo for Tali Bas Dvora Bina by Rochelle and Ed Berger. We pray that their cousin has Rafu Shlomo. I want to thank first the Chesed Committee, especially Ofer Parnes and Betty Kay, for arranging this evening and suggesting the topic, not to mention the speaker, and thank all the women who helped out purchase the food, Rochelle Margulies, Rhonda Avner, Sheila Apfel, and Naomi Schiff. So thanks to all of them and to all of you for coming. I'm actually delighted to be able to address this topic. One reason is that I could use the chizuk myself. It's an occupational hazard in the rabbinate. I was at the RCA convention last week. So you get together with your colleagues and you realize that, you know, 400 or 500 families have only one rabbi to talk about. But one rabbi has 400 or 500 families to talk about. So we're in a much better position. And secondly, I'm taking advantage of the psak of the Chofetz Chaim and the recognition that the lecture tonight is really critic proof, because the Chofetz Chaim writes explicitly that it's very common for people to hear a drasha and then to criticize it. And he said that's also a pidin. It's completely forbidden, according to halacha, lahalig mimeno, to mock the shir, v'lomar she'en v'drasha sov mamish, to say there's nothing to his drasha, she'en malishmoa, he didn't say anything worthwhile hearing. That's Lashon Hara Gemura. So in fact, and whatever I say, you'll walk out, and there's not much you could say negative about it. Maybe you'll find creative ways. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said famously that if you say the rabbi can't sing and the chazan can't learn, so that's Lashon Hara. But if you say the rabbi can't learn and the chazan can't sing, that's Ratzicha already. That's homicide. So be careful. Shmiras HaLashon in the home. There are two topics that relate to Shmiras HaLashon in the home. Obviously, there's a relationship between spouses, between husbands and wives, and between parents and children as well. Now, on the one hand, it's obvious. It's also to speak Lashon Hara anywhere and to any person, as a general rule. There should be no difference between telling Lashon Hara to a friend and telling it to a husband or wife or to a child or listening to the Lashon Hara that comes from a child. So it's so obvious I could stop now and ask for questions. But there's another hand, and that is that I found, and probably many of you have found as well, that there are many situations, ordinary situations, that require discussion in the family that border on, or very often cross over, into Lashon Hara. So how do you distinguish between that? There's something that relates even to normal, private, intimate communications, or problems or difficulties people have that will exist between spouses or with one spouse with someone else, a workplace or a friend, a neighbor, or with a child, with problems with a child. So how then do we maneuver our way through this minefield, which after all we're talking about in Issa D'Oraisa, a Torah prohibition? You say first, it's not such an unreasonable argument, although it's false, you fall asleep after this, it's not such an unreasonable argument to say that Lashon Hara shouldn't apply, should not apply in this context. Because the svar is that family-type Lashon Hara doesn't really fit the profile of the Isser Lashon Hara. Isser Lashon Hara is a product of aggression that you have against some other person. It's a very subtle form of aggression. Lashon Hara is verbal aggression. You can't take a gun and shoot the person, so you'll kill him with words. You can't overtly harm him to try to destroy his reputation. Now, implicit in Lashon Hara is that the speaker gets some benefit out of it. Right, granted, the Gemara says in Arafin that, in fact, there's no benefit to Lashon Hara, certainly not to the speaker. But the Gemara is talking about a material benefit. You don't gain anything in the real world. But there is a psychological benefit. Medaber bidnus chavera, which is the Yisur of Lashon Hara, to disparage someone, to lessen the listener's estimation of a particular subject. You disparage his reputation, and then the listener thinks less of that person. So in fact, you get an edge. There is an advantage in doing that. You feel better in some certain cases, psychological superiority, and you can even elevate yourself. You make yourself look better by exposing the foibles of that particular subject. The thing is that in a family context, that's rare, because there really is no edge. There's no advantage they're looking to gain over another person. In a social context, you could say, or think, even intuit, I'll talk Lashon Hara about this person, about C, so A and B don't like him anymore, don't invite him, or whatever it is. In a family context, that's not so. It's not a question of the husband or wife befriending X or not befriending X. So the notion of Lashon Hara being the tool of verbal aggression to harm another person at the expense of elevating yourself, I don't see it as common in a family context as I would in a social context, because there's no real gain to the person to speak Lashon Hara about someone else. Nonetheless, they're very important issues that therefore arise in a family context. The Svara may be so, but the Issa still exists. And the Chafetz Chaim is clear, you can't talk Lashon Hara to anybody, about anybody. So, however we argue the theoretics, the practicality is that you can't speak Lashon Hara about anyone. And then the question becomes, how do you share difficulties, confidences, problems that you have at work with friends, with neighbors? How do you maneuver out of an argument that you're having with someone? Let's say you're fighting with someone else and you want to consult your spouse. What do I do in this situation? Well, how do you even relate the situation without violating the stricture of Lashon Hara? Because there's no doubt that even to relate the conflict is going to cause some diminution of the reputation of the other person in the mind of the spouse who's listening to it. Of course, you're not going to relate the argument in such a way that you look bad. So you relate in such a way that the other person looks bad. Well, how do you talk about it? How do you find that? Worse, you could easily be in a situation where it shuts down communication between a husband and wife, or at least limits communication between a husband and wife so they can't help each other. And that, of course, can't be good. How do you encourage a child to talk about problems that child is having in school, with a friend, with a Rebbe, with a teacher, with the laws of Lashon Hara? Because, you know, teachers make mistakes also. I think now the way we look at the world, and I've said this in the past, completely the opposite of when I grew up, now it seems that teachers are always wrong. When I was a kid, I was always wrong, the teacher was always right, but, you know, Nishtanu Hadoros, the generations have changed. Well, if a child is having a problem with a teacher, and almost of necessity today, it's going to mean that you think less of that teacher. No good, shouldn't be seen, how dare you say such a thing, do such a thing. How does a child talk about it? What can be the, what's the head there? On the other hand, how do you tell a child not to talk about something that's bothering them? How do you tell it to a spouse? Imagine, I've never had the situation, but imagine you start telling a problem to your spouse, and he or she says, don't tell me, it's Lashon Hara. Narrow communication is really at the heart of what a good, successful, happy Jewish marriage is. The Torah says in Parshas Bereishis, Veitzav Hashem Elokim es Adam Lemor, God commanded Adam Arishon with a number of mitzvos, those became the shemitz b'nei Noach. So Gemara in Sanhedrin darshans each word of the pasuk. V'tzav Hashem Elokim es Adam leimor. So the Gemara says leimor is gilu arayos, one of the seven Noachide laws. So Rav Aviner asks, what's the connection between leimor, saying, and gilu arayos, and immorality? He says, you see that kiddushin and marriages revolve around Amiro. Kiddushin itself is effected through Amira, Harat Mikudesh Asli. A Yavama is married through what's called a Mamar, a statement that's made. And in fact, marriage is defined by Amira. So much so, he has a nice phrase. He says the relationship of a husband and wife is Chibur through Dibur. Chibur al yidei Dibur. You connect through speech. If your speech is limited in the sense that things which are troubling a person cannot be related for fear of violating the laws of Lashon Hara, then how, in fact, are you going to have that Chibur through Dibur? Chibur comes about with a soulmate by feeling that that person understands you so well that he or she will be able to help you through whatever turmoil you have. But how then do you relate to turmoil without violating the Torah? The Gemara says in Yomo, that Ayin Heim and Aleph, quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, the Agoba Levish Yashcheno. If a person has a worry in his heart, Yashcheno should suppress it. So the Gemara darshans the word Yashcheno in two different contexts in a way which accords completely with the modern psychology. It is in fact very prescient. Zagoba Levish Yashcheno. So the Gemara gives two pieces of advice, Machlokas Ravami Ravashi. One says Yashcheno Midaito. How do you deal with a worry in your heart, a concern, a problem? Put it out of your mind. What does it mean put it out of your mind? Do something else. Get involved in activity. Channel your fears, your concerns, your anxieties into a different modality altogether. And you'll find it doesn't bother you anymore because you got involved with something else. If you sit and let it weigh on you, then it's a heavy burden. But Yashchena Midaito, get it out of your mind by doing something else. So soon you'll find it's not such a da'ogo and life goes on. That's one opinion. The second opinion of the Gemara is Yashchena Midaito, Yasichena La'acherim. What do you do with a da'ogo belev, a concern, a problem, an anxiety in your heart? Tell it over to someone else. Yasichena La'acherim. You talk it over with someone, you feel the burden is lifted, you feel better about yourself, maybe the problem has a resolution. If not, maybe you see in a different light that it's not so cumbersome anymore, you feel better. Well, Zanga Balevish, Yasichena Lacherim, well, there are many problems that would seem also to involve potentially Lashon Hara. So how do you tell it over to others? I guess you keep the person anonymous. It's ideal. Sometimes you can. Sometimes you can't. And if you can't, then what do you do with the situation? One other point, by way of introduction, the famous Mishnah in Avos, in the first parak, where we are admonished, Al tarbe sicha im isha. Don't converse too much with women. Be'ishto amru. The Mishnah says we're talking about one's wife, obviously not with other people as well. So most say the problem is the question of hirhur. You'll get involved in an attraction to the woman. But the Groth says differently. The Golmi Vilna says, Al tarbe sicha ma'isha ve'ishto amru. He says, sicha of course means frivolous speech. It doesn't say l'daber, don't speak. I mean, sicha is a light, flippant, frivolous speech, but the Gra understood it to mean, don't be like Korach, who consulted his wife, and his wife egged him on to his death. And the Gemara in Bamitzia Daf Nun Tesam at Aleph derives from this, that called Shomea La'atzat Ishto, no fair Gehenim. A person who listens to his wife's advice is going to fall into the pit. Alright, I made the mistake of inviting my wife tonight. So now I have to somehow extricate myself from the pit. The same Gemara, right afterwards, asks this question. How do you say that a person who consults his wife, no for Gehenom, when Chazal had a famous saying, Itzach gutzo gichim betilchosh lo. If your wife is short, bend down and listen to what she's whispering to you. That is to say, bend down. The husband and wife should always see each other as equals, as if they're on the same level. And therefore, you're supposed to consult your wife with etzos. Famous case we have in the Gemara Brachos, that when Rabbi Gamliel was deposed as the Nasi, They suggested a few people, the Shur of Akiva, weren't accepted. And then they suggested Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And he said, Gemara says, Ozal ve'imuch b'davisu. He said, I have to go consult my wife whether I should take this position. She more or less advised him not to take it, but what the Gemara relates is that she said, well, if you take it, these are the pitfalls. These are the problems that you'll have. You have to be able to overcome them. So you see, in fact, that that's the norm in any healthy marriage, that the spouses consult each other about problems. So in fact, is when the wife is giving bad advice, like Korach's wife gave him bad advice. And that's Altar B'Sicha Me'isha. Don't get involved in discussions with people who will harm you, give you bad advice. But in fact, if you trust your wife's judgment, if she's wise and understanding, and especially astute, no wife, for example, then in fact, it's a chutza, gichin v'til kol shlo. If your wife is short, bend down, listen to what she has to say. Don't look down, don't look up either. Imagine you're on eye level, and you're speaking as equals, and in fact, the advice that you're getting and giving to each other is good and sound and proper advice. But then the question recurs. What if the problem involves relating information that would be disparaging to other people? What do you do? How do you relate it? So in fact, there's a procedure. We're all very careful not to speak Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, of course, is a halachic category. And there are parameters to Lashon Hara as well. I once gave a class many years ago on permissible Lashon Hara, standing room only crowd, the type of Lashon Hara that you're allowed to say. The most famous heter, and not that it's a overbroad or general heter, but the most famous heter involves a chazal called a koelas. Koelas means that there is some benefit that will accrue to the listener. Let's say the victim needs justice, needs compensation. The victim is wrong. And the only way to get justice for the victim is to say, well, X was, you know, robbed by Y, or beaten by Y, or cheated, etc. So then there's a toelas, because someone will benefit from it. Or, another classic case, if there will be harm to others that can be prevented. Those are the famous categories in halacha of the shidduch reports, the business reports. If someone asks about a shidduch, we'll maybe get to some of the details a little later. She can't conceal it if you know information that would be important, would be toeles, and would harm the person. Certainly in a business context, it's more obvious. If someone wants to go into a partnership with another person who's a crook, then you're obligated to tell the person he's a crook. You tell him in a different way. I wouldn't do it myself. No one I know would do it. No one in the world would do it. All others who've done it have not been successful. But there's a way to do it without actually saying that he's a crook. But on the contrary, there's a chiyuv. That's where lo selech rochel ba'amecho collides with lo sa'amod al damreyecho. Not to be a talebearer conflicts with not standing idly by someone who's being harmed, either financially or physically. There's another toelis involved, which I would imagine is a very common one that people use probably without knowing the halacha. If you want to use someone as an example of a mido miguna or of rishus, if someone has a particular character trait that you want to impart to a child, then you're allowed to do it, to say to the child, don't learn from this, don't do this act, don't get involved in this chevra. So of course you can't use that device simply to out a nudnik, someone who's bothering you, but in fact, if there's a mido miguna, if there's an act of rishus, if there's something prevalent in the neighborhood, you could say, don't do that, even though people are doing that. So those are all permissible. The question is, under what circumstances is it permissible? And here we come to the famous seven conditions that the Chafetz Chaim, in his Sefer Chafetz Chaim, which I have here, I'm sure you have at home as well, lists for us. So Chafetz Chaim, of course, Rabbi Yisrael HaKohen Kagan made his bones with this book, traveling around Europe, selling it. It was a revolution, in fact, in Poland and Lithuania, that a whole sefer should be written on the laws of Lashon Hara. So, of course, he pioneered it. so much so that he wrote many other Sfarim, but he's known as the Chafetz Chaim. That was his first one. So what are the seven conditions by which we can relate Lashon Hara for Toelas? And we'll see we'll be able to relate these to conversations in the home, to the spouse, or with the child. One, and they're all very important, by the way, and I didn't say that they're all indispensable. You need all seven. Five or six out of seven is not good. So what are the seven? The first one is that you have no doubt that the information is true. No doubt. You have no doubt the information is true. Either you saw it, you hurt yourself, you heard it yourself, two reliable aides reported it, so you know it to be true. Secondly, there's no possible heter for what the person did. Meaning, let's say someone did an act which is unequivocally wrong, so that's what we're talking about. What if it's an act that might be justifiable, all right? Let's say you see someone driving in a car on Shabbos with another person, so you're not allowed to say, I saw someone driving with another person on Shabbos. What if he was taking that person off? So if there's no tzad heter, then you're not allowed to relate it. If there is a possible heter, then you're not allowed to relate it because you're giving over a false impression of the person if you don't present all the facts. Thirdly, interestingly enough, you can't relate it unless you admonish the subject personally. Unless you tell the person that I saw such and such or heard such and such, is it true? Now, that won't apply if the person is too powerful, doesn't care, or won't listen to you. So that really absolves us in many business situations. Not all social situations, because they were not talking power, we're just talking loss of face. But it has to be something that before you relate it, you're willing to go to that person and say, or someone else that you know, said to that person, what you did was wrong. Fourth, you can only say the facts that you yourself know personally without any exaggeration. Now, this is a very important thing. Because if you say someone has, let's say it's the business context, someone says business failed, but you don't know all the details of why the business failed. You could say you heard he wasn't successful, but you have to watch how you say it because you don't know the entire background. You can only say the facts that you personally know and not exaggerate, which is also a tendency. Now, that tendency is exacerbated because of the fifth condition, and that is you have to intend only the toelas. It's a very difficult madriga to reach. In other words, you can't derive any personal pleasure from it. That, I don't like this guy anyway, and now he did something wrong, and I know about it, I can't wait to tell the people about it, I feel good about it. No, that can't be. You can't derive any personal pleasure. Now what happens is, if you would, on some level, derive personal pleasure from it, you're much more prone to exaggeration. Of course, you will not favorably judge whatever he did because you're predisposed to looking at any action or any statement the person made negatively. So you have to make sure there's no personal element involved. And that's a very difficult level to reach. And of course, you also can't be guilty of the same sin as that person, which would be a bit hypocritical to relate Lashon Hara, so to speak, for Toelas when you yourself do the same thing. In that case, rather than use Bill as the example, use yourself as the example, because it's much more real, and you know, of course, what's true and what's not true. Sixth, there can't be any other way of achieving the benefit. In other words, if you want to protect someone, or inform someone, or teach someone, there can't be any other way of achieving the same goal except by relating this particular event. Now, we'll see all these in the marriage context, and in fact, that's also something that has to be negotiated or finessed, because is there another way to achieve the same benefit? Let's say you're having a problem with someone. Well, is there a way to relate the case by concealing some personal identification data that makes the issue just purely objective? It's a situation and not a person. Or is there a way of relating it in which certain incidental facts are changed? so that the identity of the guilty cannot be established for sure. Is it possible? Is it not possible? And the seventh criterion is that there is no greater loss that will be caused to the subject by revealing the matter. All right? Let's say, for example, someone breaks into my home and steals my toaster oven. All right? Happens all the time. And I find out about it. Now, I have two avenues. According to the Torah, what am I entitled to? Tashlumin. I got my toaster oven back. If I go to the police, though, and I'm talking another case of Messiah, forget it for a second. If I go to the police, then he's subject to a greater penalty. In prison, too, stealing a toaster oven. Or not looking at similar things. You have to make sure that there's no greater harm will accrue to the person by your revelations. Of course, again, in a family context, that's unlikely to happen. But those are the seven conditions. You have no doubt that it's true. There's no possible justification for what the person did. You have to admonish him yourself, unless he's too powerful or won't listen. You can only say what you know without exaggeration. Which, as you start talking to people, it happens more and more. You have to intend only a toelas, only the toelas, without any personal benefit, and you yourself not being guilty of that same sin. There's no other way of achieving the same benefit, and revelation will not cause a greater loss to the subject. If you have those seven conditions, then you can relate it in a way which affects the toelas. Now the question is, what is the toelas going to be? If it's the resolution of a problem, that could be a toelas. If the only concern is that you just need to vent, which we all do on occasion, that's very nice. But the question is, who says the Torah permits a person just to vent? You may need to have a key going every now and then. Doesn't mean the Torah permits it. So venting gives me some psychological gratification. But who says that's permitted by the Torah? So you have to make sure that there is indeed a toelas, and the toelas is one that is immediate, and the issue discussed falls within the parameters of these conditions, and therefore, thereby, in a marriage or family context, Lashon Hara can be minimized. Now, look at a few cases. Let's say it's work-related. So there are ways to discuss a problem at work. I mean, many times, if people are working in different spheres, you may not know the co-workers at all. So to have one say, you know, I had a fight with Jack, and you don't know who Jack is, you don't care who Jack is, so then it's already neutral. It's already in the realm of anonymity. We'll get to children's issues in a second. I think probably one of the most likely venues of Lashon Hara in a family context deals with what I said before, the Mida Maguna. That you mean well, not something you don't mean well, but you mean well that someone has a bad character trait. And you will educate the spouse or child, this is wrong, don't be like this, don't learn from this. Chavetz Chaim mentions as well a case of a batla, someone who is he's a batla in Torah. He's not learning as he should. He's frivolous. I'll read it to you. You don't think I'm making it up. It's in Lashon Hilchos. Hilchos Lashon Hara. Klal Dalet, Halacha Yud. Hafa Pichein, Imroa Odom Be'echad Mida Maguna. If you see someone a despicable trait, Kegongava, arrogant, Okas, prone to anger, Oshore Midos Ros, there's other bad character traits, Oshu Batlan Mitoro, he just doesn't learn. He's involved in frivolous acts. And the like. Nochonlo l'saper davazel is no olatamidov ulahazhirom shliyishaber imo. It's proper to inform this to a child or to a disciple and to warn them not to associate with such a person. Kidei shlo yulmo mimasov, so they don't learn from this person. Now you know, in a child's context, depending on the age of the child, it's not inappropriate to say that because children are influenced by their friends. If you see a certain Mida Maguna, I'm not talking about a 5-year-old, you know, an infant, they only have Midos Magunos. They're so selfish, just crying in the middle of the night. But I'm talking, you know, somebody 10 years old, 15 years old. a parent has to make a judgment on occasion. It's not someone I want my child associating with. So that's not Lashon Hara. Kidei shel yilmudu mimaisav. Ki ha'ikar mashizhira tor v'lashon hara filo al emes hum kavanaso livazos es chaver v'lismaf v'klono. The prototypical case of Lashon Hara, which is prohibited, is the person's intention is to disparage another person and to rejoice in his shame. That is the Lashon Hara of the Torah. Avalim kavanoso lishmorf chavero shelo yilmad mimazov. But if his intention is to protect someone else, spouse, child, or even a friend, that he should not learn from his deeds, poshut the mutter. It's obviously permissible, and the Chafetz Chaim goes even further, who mitzvah nami iko. It's even a mitzvah in such a case, because of losan al dam reyacha. Again, it depends. There's a sliding scale of what's important, what's not important. But if you see a mida meguna, you're allowed to relate it, even if it's attached to a person, if there's a benefit to the child or to the listener. In fact, someone asked me this question once, you see that Torah is filled with Lashon Hara, right? Avram did something wrong. Sarah did something wrong. Yaakov did something wrong. Moshe sinned. David HaMelech, Shmuel Beis is filled with David HaMelech's foibles. So I'm just saying, how does God tell us Lashon Hara, right? We think worse of David HaMelech after the episode with Bathsheba than we did before, or had we not known about it. So how does the Tanakh relate such incidents? So that's the answer. Because there's a benefit of Lima Torah. We learn from great people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through Moshe Rabbeinu, through the Nevi'i Emes, relate these incidents to us. Ultimately, of course, they don't reflect poorly on Avram, Moshe, or David, but they reflect on their greatness, on their majesty. But nonetheless, that's the Toelis, the Toelis of Lima Torah. It's no different to say about sorrow, like Ramban says, that she may have sinned in her treatment of Hagar. That's not a sin of Lashon Hara, because there's a Toelis that we have in learning it. No different than if we point out someone else's foible, but only for the Toelas. I'll ask you, and this a person has to think to himself or herself, when and if you're relating such matters, is the intention for a Toelas, or is the intention levavos eschaver v'smach v'klono? And it's not a zero-sum game. I'm sorry, it is a zero-sum game. It has to be 100% of one or the other. Because in fact, if the intention is only for Toelas, then you'd be allowed. If the person derives even a small satisfaction from being able to belittle someone else, even if the majority of the reason why, as the assessees and percentages, is to help another person, that is insufficient, according to the halacha. Because in fact, what you're doing then is deriving pleasure from belittling someone else, and that is the verbal aggression which is prohibited. Children should be taught the laws of Lashon Hara like any other halacha. In the simplest sense, it requires stopping a child from reporting idle gossip. Joe got a 48 on the test. You know, children very often do that. If Joe got a 48, that's because they got a 52 and they want to make themselves look better. These go back to the 16th century, the way kids act. So the fact is, a child can report, maybe without any pride, that he got a 52. Is he allowed to say that Joe got a 48? Or the rest of the class is even worse? Probably not. Probably not. But that's Lashon Hara. So the correct answer, which always is, because in this sense the child should live in the world of absolutes, not the world of the relative, and I always say this, makes no difference what anyone else got. Only you took this test, so how did you do? Not a comparative thing, but a parent doesn't grade on a curve. The teacher might, but the parent doesn't. How did you do? That's the question. So in that sense, the child should be admonished very gently. That makes no difference. Every child learns this as they grow older. Makes no difference what anyone else did. And you need not report anything about yourself by including others or especially disparaging others. What about problems a child is having with a friend or a rebbe? should have to take place in the same context. Now, that would mean, again, all this is part of chinuch, and chinuch v'lashon hara is no different, probably harder than it is for other mitzvahs, but a child comes back and says, the Rebbe was mean to me. Alright? You should probably tell the child, don't say that. That's an adjective. That's a character judgment. Rather than judge the person or characterize the person, to tell what the person did. Speak in terms of actions, not descriptions or judgments. And then the child will feel, child will become accustomed to speaking a certain way and not drawing conclusions. Just say, what did the Rebbe say? Not your understanding of it, not your impressions of it, but what exactly, what did you say and what did he say? And then from there you derive the other facts of the circumstance. But if you tinker with the way the child is relating those facts, then indeed you'll be able to use any situation as chinuch for the laws of Lashon Hara as well. Now, spouses, exact same thing? Much more difficult, of course. But it's the exact same thing. We are all prone to, so the Gemara says, v'chulam bavak Lashon Hara. It's very difficult to escape this realm. Very difficult. I just saw the other day, someone had a beautiful quotation. I forget where I read it even. It's in Yiddish, but I'll translate into English because I don't speak Yiddish. The quotation was that a Jew should always aspire to be a malach. Because if you don't aspire to be a malach, you won't even be a mensch. There's a lot of truth to that. You have to aspire, you have to hope for perfection. We can't achieve perfection. But if we don't achieve perfection while trying to, at least we'll be b'nai adam. We'll be people. We'll be thinking people, moral people, rational people. You can't be a malach. Try to be a malach, and then you'll wind up being a mensch, aware of our weaknesses. It's very interesting. The Chofetz Chaim mentions as well in Hilchos Rechilos, in Klal Zayin, something that I think is probably borne out by human psychology, and something worthy to discuss. How you'll receive it, I guess I'll know in 30 seconds. But the Chofetz Chaim said it's a special isser not to tell Lashon Hara to a wife about someone else, or to accept Lashon Hara from the wife. The special isser beyond the general laws of Lashon Hara. Why? Because he says if you tell Lashon Hara to a wife, women are very protective of their husband's honor, at least mostly. Very protective of the husband's honor, and if they hear anything, they'll become very defensive and very supportive. If the husband was wronged by someone and tells the wife, invariably she's going to exacerbate the situation. Why? How? By calling the other wife and saying that your husband is a bum. And before you know it, instead of having two people arguing, you have four people arguing. And she'll retain that hurt, that grievance, far longer than the husband will. And conversely, he says, you shouldn't accept Lashon Hara from a wife, because she'll see that the husband enjoys it. Why does he enjoy it? Not for the other reasons. Because every husband enjoys knowing that his wife is protective of him. And with the stories that he is told, the Chofetz Chaim writes, it'll bring him to sorrows, more troubles, kas, anger, matzo marivo, constant strife, the davo nefesh, and just a despondent spirit. Imagine if we knew every bad thing that someone said about us. Some of you might. I wasn't here about it. Some of you might. Imagine if we knew. The many times in life, it pays not to know things. It pays not to see things. I always tell younger Rabbanim what I heard from Rabbi Wein 20 years ago. In the rabbinate, it's good to be blind in one eye and deaf in one ear. It's a good rule. You can't always see everything, and you can't always hear everything. The worst thing we want to know is the absolute MS, what people think about us, what they're saying about us. We don't know. There's always a person who wants to ingratiate himself or herself to you by saying, hey, this is what Jack said about you. That, in fact, is the law of Rechilus. That's not Lashon Hara. It's Rechilus. Rechilus is the pedal. A Rachel is a peddler. A spice pedal, in fact, in the classical language. A person peddles, wears from one person to the other. This is what this person said about you. Well, in a marital context, the Chabad Chaim said there's a special issur involved in that, because it'll linger much more, and it'll cause much more animosity and aggravation, and really ruin their quality of life, even if in the short term they'll feel a certain closeness, that they've been able to be intimate with each other and even share the hurt. In the short term, it's true. In the long term, you want to know, why are you telling me this? Is bad mouthing me. I need to know that. So that's why in a marital context, it's better to be avoided. It's a bad idea. Now, I think the most common venue that we have for Lashon Hara is the telephone, of course. But the telephone is a little more distant. You can't see the person at the other end. But the Shabbos table is probably the most common venue where these issues will arise, because you're all sitting around. The spouses are there. The children are there. Everyone, the whole family's together. Now, there's no doubt that the Shabbos table can be used for instructional purposes too. To speak about a mida maguna, or how a child should choose the right social group, or to avoid individuals or situations where they can come to harm. But nonetheless, great care should be taken not to corrupt the home. Not to corrupt the home. And in fact, with all the conditions of the Chabad Chaim and the permissible Lashon Hara for Toelas, no good comes from the only subject matter at a Shabbos table being permissible Lashon Hara. No good comes from that either. Remember, one form of tzaraas was nige batim. Nega tzaraas that afflicted the walls of a person's house. That's when the walls have heard a little too much Lashon Hara. And they react. In the time of Tanakh, the walls themselves reacted to it. The bricks would start turning colors. Maybe it's why people paint their dining rooms and renovate their homes so much, to cover up the discoloration of their walls and bricks. But nonetheless, nige batim, the walls of the house can also hear too much Lashon Hara, even if permissible Lashon Hara. I always think that the statement of the Beis Halevi is true, rings true, and is appropriate as well. I think, by the way, Benjamin Franklin said this earlier, but the Beis Halevi said in Hebrew, and Franklin didn't, so we quote the Beis Halevi. He said, inferior people speak about other people, and mediocre people speak about things. This one bought this one's owning this. Superior people speak of ideas. And that should be the way we run our homes. Of course, inferior people run afoul of the laws of Lashon Hara, because their only subject matter is others. And even if they fancy themselves, they're always finding a toelas. Well, the mice are practically, at a certain point, there really is no toelas anymore. And the only benefit is the psychological one that comes from belittling other people. And mediocre people speak about things that they bought, that they want to buy. You know, these things, easy come, easy go. It's nice to have, but it's just, they're pros to a person's life. They're frills. They don't really matter, but at least you're not involved in evil talk. The famous story of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim never, when he traveled, wore rabbinic garb. That's why I haven't come to Chafetz Chaim, by the way. When he wasn't Rodney, he didn't dress like a rabbi. In fact, even in Rodney, he never wore a rabbanisha hat. He wore a pea cap, almost like a baseball cap. So he would go from town to town, and when he was selling his books, and no one was anonymous. He was once sitting on a coach, and the driver spoke to him about the horses and hay and feed and the best type of feed to buy and the best type of horse that will be able to drudge through the snows and the mud of the Russian winter. And then they got to the town, and there was a tremendous throng of people came to greet the Chafetz Chaim, and he didn't know why the people were there. So this little man, Chafetz Chaim, was very short. My grandfather, Rosh Hashanah, saw him when he came to Warsaw. in the late teens after World War One. He's maybe 4'10". He's a very short man. So the Chofetz Chaim got off the coach, and the people grabbed him and lifted him and put him on a throne. And the coachman was horrified, aghast, that here he was trapped the Chofetz Chaim for 2 or 3 hours, and they had nothing of nothing meaningful to discuss. So the coachman ran up to the Chofetz Chaim to beg his forgiveness. He said, "I'm sorry, Rebbe, I wasted your time speaking about horses and feed and hay." And the Chofetz Chaim said, "On the contrary, we rode 2 hours and speak a word about another human being. There's a mitzvah in that. The things, that's for mediocre people, nothing better to talk about. At least it won't be Lashon Hara. But superior people always speak of ideas, thoughts. That's Shabbos, Torah. That's thoughts, that's ideas. That's what makes us who we are. And that should be the focus. And invariably, when that's the focus, suddenly the personal slights that preoccupy us much of the time don't seem that important. And who bought what, with what money, and whose money, pales into insignificance. So certainly the mechanism to deal with real problems exists. And I don't think for a moment that the laws of Lashon Hara are meant to stifle speech in the house in a way that affects marital communication or parent-child communications. Exactly opposite. Rather, if the formulas are applied, and the system that the halacha lays out for us is utilized, so in fact communication is enhanced, and it becomes much more meaningful and much more beneficial in a way that strengthens our marriages and our homes and enables us to be avdei Hashem in all aspects of life. I thank you very much. I trust no one has a bad word to say about this year. Okay, any questions? Wonderful. Oh, we thought, yes. Offer. Right. Yes.
Is there an issue that sometimes this one spouse is very, very troubled and really psychologically just destroyed?
There is a benefit to that. The question is it Muslim? Well, if you reach a pathological level, yes. That's why I, like many good rabbis, keep a punching bag in the basement, a heavy bag. I have different members on the floor. That's just a joke. But I have a heavy bag. It's a way to vent, you know. That's what I said before. You can vent. You want to vent. It even feels good to vent. The question is mutter. If you couldn't function, then you could probably find a way in which it is appropriate.
Let's say you're very, very upset. You know that if you
speak to
your spouse, it will help.
Right. Well, again, all these things depend on the case. You know, one of the very interesting phenomena of the rabbinate is that we get questions. I get about 100 different questions from people a week. And my experience is no different than any other rabbi. In all my years of the rabbinate, now approaching 22 years, I've gotten four questions about Lashon Hara. Is something Lashon Hara? Actually, no. It's about up to 8 now in all the years. Is something Lashon Hara? So I always say, tell me what it is and who's about. I'll let you know. You know, sometimes now it's more common with shidduch issues, but I remember someone asked when I lived in Queens a question of can they relate something about a coworker that bothers them. Yeah, these questions. So you're right, it feels good to vent. It feels good to hit someone also, but the halacha doesn't permit that. What can I tell you? Yes. That's true. If the person, the listener, keeps in mind there's another side, or more than that, you should know that even though there is such a thing as permissible Lashon Hara, that doesn't exempt the listener from his or her obligation not to believe it. In other words, halacha has a very interesting dichotomy that you're allowed to act as if it's true without necessarily believing it. Unless it's not as well known. If it's well known, it's different. But if something just affects a small group, you can protect yourself. Say, not going to business with this person, even though you may not believe the person's a thief. In fact, you're obligated not to believe the person is dishonest. But you can protect yourself. So that what you're saying is true, but again, you're dealing in a very delicate area. And where you draw the line and how much a person will accept and won't accept is going to vary. You know, a person may say, I don't accept that. But of course they do, because that's what you're telling them. So it's a very difficult area to internalize. Yes?
Just to elaborate on what you said, I heard a couple of good examples given. A couple of good examples given in terms of the density of the area that you mentioned. That's kind of, or you buy life insurance, you know, you're not expecting to die any moment, but because there is a chance, you take that precaution. So in those situations, you're able to believe you're not going to have the accident, believe you're not going to drop dead, but still take a precaution. And I think you should have the same mindset when you're listening to the car.
Right. That's what I said. You can act as if it's true, act in a practical vein as if it's true, but not think or believe that it's true. It's two separate things. Yes, Eva. Right, so again, Eva said, just to be able to hear it, that she heard that you're allowed to pick one person in order to, what's that? Oh, you read. You're allowed to pick one person in order to tell that person, knowing it won't be carried any further. So it's true, but again, you're in the realm of the Toelas, and in the realm of the conditions that the Chafetz Chaim laid out. If it's a problem that requires venting in order to either find a solution, or simply to free oneself from that burden, so you'll be allowed to do it if the conditions are applicable. In fact, there could be many cases where it is applicable. Because again, you know what happened is true, and you're not exaggerating, and all the other conditions, the toilet that you want is for yourself. Not the personal pleasure of belittling, but the psychological relief that you have in being able to unburden oneself. That's That's the case in the Gemara. If you have a problem that's weighing you down, to discuss it with someone else. That's what you can do. Yes. Can you speak to your spouse about your child? So the working assumption is that whenever two spouses speak about their child, it's always for the child's toelos. Always. If it isn't, then there's something dysfunctional. But if it's for the child's toelos, then you certainly can. But yeah, I should add one thing. Be very careful not to apply that to a spouse. In other words, to speak to another person about a spouse, it's also to speak Lashon Hara about a spouse to someone else. Just like, by the way, it's also to speak Lashon Hara about oneself to someone else. You can't say something bad about yourself to someone else either. But you have to be careful, especially the context. You know, I guess the most damaging context will be to tell someone who will not be able to retain, tell someone who will retain the information much longer than it is viable. All right, I always tell young couples before they marry that if they have fights or arguments, be very careful who you tell. Very careful. Like, the classic case is, one spouse tells the parents that the other person yelled something or said something, and I don't think that's healthy. Again, depending on the situation. Because the parent will, of course, be protective of the child, and after the couple makes up, they apologize to each other, the parent will still feel and will never forget. Of course, the same thing exists in the marital context. Be very careful who you find to tell. Someone who could be neutral and someone who will not look differently at that person in the future. Yeah, Betty. Right. That's in the immediate context that you have to say you don't believe it. The best thing is to change the topic. Horses and hay, always a good conversation starter. Change the topic. Because you're right, it's very hard to tell a person to whom you have to respect, you know, don't talk about this. So change the topic. Ask them how the grandchildren are. Then, yes. I can't hear. I mean, can you say Lashon Hara about a non-Jew? So that already is discussed in the post-it. Certainly it's no mitzvah to say about a non-Jew. In terms of the Lashon of Rachel Be'amecho, you can't peddle Lashon Hara amongst your people. It's a little different. The basic approach that most of the posts can take is that a person who becomes comfortable speaking Lashon Hara about non-Jews will become quite comfortable speaking Lashon Hara about Jews as well, because the satisfaction is the same. So even if there may or may not, there may not be a halacha case, there may not be, nonetheless, it's a midah meguna. It's a terrible trait, and it's a practice that should be abhorred, because the satisfaction is such, it's intoxicating. People love it. Again, it depends who you're talking about. I'm a little too complicated to get into now, but there's a whole category of permissible Lashon Hara in a limited sense called Ba'afe Klas. Lashon Hara that's known to three people. If three people know it, the assumption is everybody knows about it. So I always look at it that way in the realm of celebrity gossip, which consumes a lot of people. Since everybody knows about it, to say that, you know, this actor did such and such, that's not really Lashon Hara. But in the long scheme of things, it really is inconsequential speech that doesn't edify or elevate one's life, so why even waste one's time with it? Yes? If you say Lashon Hara in front of the person. Yes. Right, no, it's a very good question. If two candidates are running for election. Right. Well, you see, in Israel, they're not really that careful about Lashon Hara in those contexts. That is true. And there's a lot to say, too. The fact is, as a technical matter, it's Lashon Hara, even if you say it to the person himself in the presence of someone else. All right? There is an argument that's made that Lashon Hara will be something that you don't want the person to find out about. But if you're comfortable enough saying it in his presence, then it's not really Lashon Hara. But that's only in an environment where people are much more refined and much more dignified. But in an environment where people will say anything to anybody, about anyone, and to their face, then you can't say that. As a technical matter of halacha, it's Lashon Hara, even if the person is there when you say it about them. Yes, dear? Well, it depends on the age of the child. Right, that's true. But again, if you go back to what I said before, that you could shift the conversation from a characterization to the facts. Not that so-and-so is weird, but what did so-and-so do that you would say that he's weird? Right. Yeah, it depends on the age of the child. I mean, 5, 10, 15. When a child is 30, you know, it's about time they learn something. Yes, 35. 35, right here, 40. Yes, any other questions? Yes. As a result of Lashon Hara, you're withholding important information from who about what? You mean a shidduch case or a business case? Right? So that's the situation. That's what Samadam Reacha. Now the information has to be one which is relevant and necessary to know. Alright? Which is not always that clear. And especially in the crazy world in which we live. If, you know about someone in a shidduch context that their mother puts plastic over the tablecloth, and the other side is finds such a concept abhorrent, then I don't know if it's proper to tell them that, because it's not that meaningful. But it depends if there's something about the individual, which is the context of the Chafetz Chaim, a midah meguna, a maisa ra, even a shame ra, even a bad reputation, then you can't. It's a very interesting phenomenon that we have in Jewish life. There's a phrase that the Gemara uses about women who are muzaras balavono, they are weaving by the light of the moon. If someone has a reputation, bad reputation, such that the women who are weaving by the light of the moon speak about that person, then there are certain conclusions in halacha that can be drawn. There's a kol about that individual. The question is, what is it they're talking about? They may be weaving by the light of the moon, but who are they talking about people? No, you see, a shame raw matters in Jewish life. And a shame raw, sometimes even if there's smoke and no fire, the mere fact that someone has a shame raw, that comes from credible sources, not just idle gossip. A shame raw matters. So therefore, if people are talking about someone, then it's not true. It's not true. I always think the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim that I heard from Rabbi Wein when I was a child, I mean, I was a teenager. He must tell the story 50, 60 times. So a Talmud, an old Talmud, comes to Chafetz Chaim and, to visit, and the Chafetz Chaim says to him, how are you? So he says, they're accusing me of stealing in my business. So the Chafetz Chaim said to him, I heard about it. So the man said, but it's not true. And the Chafetz Chaim said, it should be true. It's bad enough they're saying it about you. Well, that's the Madregan life as well, that you don't want even accusations. You want to make sure your reputation is impeccable. And therefore, what the women in Muzaras Balavon are doing matters also. Yes. Can you repeat something that you read in a newspaper? So that would be a classic case of op-ed plus, something which is out in the public domain. Now you can, but the question is why? If you're doing it to spread the Lashon Hara, then it's wrong. If you're doing it to warn someone about something that might harm them in the future, then it would be permissible. But that would be another trap of a person getting involved in something which is not technically an iser, but gives him or her the satisfaction, like the Lashon Hara about a non-Jew, satisfaction of speaking Lashon Hara, in which case it won't make a difference whether it's in the newspaper or not in the newspaper. It will become the source of the next article, because that's the seductive quality of Lashon Hara. So if it's in the public domain, you really can. But whether you should say it to someone else who really need not know that information because it's not beneficial to them, that's a different issue altogether. Depends on the context. You know, it always depends what the accusation is. Yes. Oh, all her points are important. I learned that.
Whenever a child's dream issues up, even if when they're less than cut off, if we
you can't say don't talk about it. You can't say don't talk about it.
If you're speaking to more times such as her, she may stifle the relationship, and then they may not want to communicate as much to us, and we'll have less of an influence.
That's true. I agree completely. Again, it has to be guided in a certain way. So just, you know, rank idle gossip, you can teach the child also. You don't have to paddle the child, but you can teach the child. There's no benefit to, knowing a joke out of 30 on the test. Why is that relevant to anything? In a nice way, not like I say. In a way that, you know, my wife would say, in a very nice way.
Right.
A child has to feel. It's a tightrope to walk. Because a child has to feel they can bring anything to their parents. That is true. They have to feel they can bring any issue to their parents. Right. Yes. On the other hand, you don't judge it. On the other hand, the child also has to know. Yes, you have to train the child not only to wear tefillin, but also how to speak. At a certain point, part of the process is letting the child know, in a nice way, in an educational way, that these are permissible forms of speech or permissible subject matters, and these are not. And there has to be some toelos for the child even to speak about it. And it's a learning process. I dare say that most of us go through life learning that process and never fully master it. Never fully master it. So we shouldn't expect more from our children than we expect from ourselves. But the basic point we're in agreement with, you, Karen, and myself, a child should always feel that the parent is an open door and they can bring issues. But over the years, a child should learn that also not everything needs to be discussed, especially when it doesn't affect them at all, right? Which is a key point. Sometimes they'll just relate, gossip that does not affect them directly, but because they also get a kick out of it. The same thing that we might do on a conscious, intuitive level, they will do on a natural level. They feel good knowing that someone failed. But to be a miskabe b'klon chaver is not a good trait. Not a good trait. If a child to gloat, say, that someone on the other team made an error that let in the run, the winning run, and therefore his team won, so that is not technically lashon hara. So that's a different mizora. They shouldn't rejoice in someone else's failures. Also true. Yes. Not believe yourself. Well, that's not one of the criteria. You have to be the Chofetz Chaim. You probably have to be the Chofetz Chaim not to feel a toelos. On the other hand, there was the Chofetz Chaim, so if he could do it.
How to work on yourself? Are there ways that the Chofetz Chaim offers to try to work on oneself to be able to look at the world that way or to not believe something? It's very hard to hear something and to really say, I'm not believing it.
You know something? Yes, Ofer said it's very hard to hear something and not believe it. I used to a little bit believe it. I used to think that's true, but I, as I've gotten older, I see more and more that in fact you can do it. You can do it. It does not have to impact on your assessment of that person's reputation. Why? Because there's no person who's above reproach, who doesn't have skeletons in his closet, and who's not at some point or other subject to some type of criticism. There's no such person. So if you don't want to be judged in that context, judge me on a holistic level. What am I? You look at me, what am I? Not all the details, not the constituent elements. So in fact, a person might even have a nigo meguna. But if that's not really the person, then you judge the person for what he is. He's a person with a flaw. So you could say, theoretically, you can make an argument. Everybody has a flaw. If I can identify that flaw and relate it to other people, all benefit by it. And then what do? We live in a community where everybody's picking out the flaws in others and telling them, don't be like Jim, don't be like, Joe. No, eventually that destroys the community. Because we recognize we have flaws, we're all imperfect. And we all try. So therefore, once you realize that, it becomes much easier to hear something about someone else and file it away, compartmentalize, that this information may benefit me in the sense that I'll avoid some potential harm from this person, but I really don't have to believe it. And you know what? I found more and more in my life as I get older that you do find many situations that the thing that you were told and you didn't believe it, but you filed it away, it turns out not to have been true. Not to have been true. The one who told it had an axe to grind, or they misinterpreted it, or they were a little overzealous in trying to protect others from harm. Yes, Father. Right, you can tell someone you're not interested. Yes, that's a sure way not to be invited back for dinner the next time. That is good. Any other questions? All right, I thank you all very much.